Getting to the seat is toughy. Okay, so welcome to Weekly Endeavours Part 4. I'm going to quickfire a couple of things. So Part 1, I'm going to go into the Brits really briefly. Part 2, I'll be talking about a post that I did on Brexit travel and visas required for artists. Again, very brief stuff. And 3, I'll be going into a BPI summary document called Two Can Play at That Game, Mixing the Music and Gaming Worlds Together and What We Can Learn from Either Part. So I won't spend too long on the Brits, but I'm really happy for the winners. In the UK, the Brits is like the musical Super Bowl. You don't need to attend to have a huge impact in terms of the discussion and the events that are happening around it. But as a little summary, 27 nominees, around 10 or 11 of which were first-time nominees. Of all of the entrants, 208 of the top 40 tracks in the last year are down to just these 27 nominees, 19 of which were number ones. These results are not industry plants, or what people would say they were. These are byproducts of having very good campaigns and being consistent and playing a lot of gigs and keeping up with that momentum and years of hard work. So give them credit to where credit is due. The second point that I was going to go into was travel after Brexit around Europe. There seems to have been a few articles covering this. Artists, just like anyone else, are still people that have to travel around from A to B, especially when they're trying to spread their music across the world. But it looks like that because of Brexit, there's going to be essentially a travel tax. We should just play by the game for now. International campaigns are so contextual in itself. It's easy just to make a really solid first-time campaign at home and then let the byproduct of that discussion roll you out into international territories. If you're based in the UK, focus on your day ones and your first-time listeners and your core audience and your friends and your family and the people that were there right from the start. You can use the internet to reach the rest of the world anyway. I don't need to be anywhere else but here in order to be able to do these things. So an artist should only travel internationally if they have a good reason to do so. So if they've got statistics that a lot of their social platform users or a lot of their music listeners are based in a certain territory, then you can always speak to an international live agent and ask them to book you out a tour outside there, and then let them sort out what the cost of that would be to be able to build that campaign and bridge the world between yourself. What else have I done? So point 3, which is the deck from the BPI, titled Two Can Play at That Game. I'm not sure if you need to be a member in order to access this, but I do think a lot of the information that the BPI give out, that's the British Phonographic Industry, is very good. Iconic people from the gaming world as well as the music world, and they put on a panel and a big discussion, a day's event, including Nightinator. So I'm going to reel out a few facts that I got from this deck after that event. So the gaming industry was $116 billion in 2019, which is growing 7.6% per year, so to speak. So the estimated global esports audience is 481 million people per annum, and gamers are 3 times more likely to be music fans than the average person in the UK, and I'm not sure how they figure out who is and who isn't, and I'm not sure who wouldn't be a music fan. Gaming can fit in pretty much anywhere, all the way from mobile to PC, and you go from the people that are less likely to be super committed into the gaming world, so they allow access on your mobile phone where you can download an app and play it for free, and you can have in-app purchases if you wish to expand your experience of the game, but ultimately you can access and play this game by just having a mobile phone. But then you move over to console players that have consoles, more dedicated forms of game playing, that have more complicated games and require more time, investment and understanding. But then you have PC gamers that build their own computers in order to be able to play the most complex games. And Dota 2, League of Legends are some of the examples of those. Originally, when there was only certain platforms of which you can play games, it's very male dominated. This deck suggests that because of the free-to-play game section, there's a much stronger female player base for the free-to-play and mobile gaming. Esports professional gamer salary is around 200k per year, but I would like to bear in mind the number of actual players per these games. I won't bring up the stats right now, but you can imagine that if this is the same size as the gaming industry being 116 billion per year, something to bear in mind if you wish to be the very best. You will be rewarded, but you do have to beat a lot of other people. Just like anything else. But we know music and gaming makes moments. And I mean, I'm going to throw back some of my own personal favourite examples. So let's look at Tony Hawk's Pro Skater series, especially 3 and 4 with the soundtracks. Need for Speed Underground 2. FIFA, GTA 3 all the way to 5. Borderlands, first with KG Elephant's theme. A Journey with Austin Wintory as a composer, winning a BAFTA. we know there's an important intersection between the two, and it's just what we can learn from each other and how we can find ways to use each other to promote art. So as a, if you own repertoire and you own tracks such as a record label, I think Monster Cat is a brilliant example of how they've intertwined themselves in the gaming world. They had exclusive contracts with Rocket League, doing all the soundtracks for them, as well as Beat Saber providing all the soundtracks for them too, as bespoke DLC packs that you can purchase. For artists to place your music inside of games, if your record label's not doing it for you, or you are independent, then it's always good to get a sync agent or someone that is inside of that group. Ultimately, building a brand involves you being seen, and the way that games work is that they are a platform of which a huge community can grow inside of the game and use the game's intellectual property as a means of discussing and sharing values. If you are an artist and your music is involved with that, or if you are a streamer and you're involved in that world, you are still in front of all of these eyes. It's just the same as performing at a show. It's just the same as being in a billboard. It's another way of advertising, but also showing and sharing your art. Regarding the monetization section of this, gaming clearly has a lot of DLC, where in every option you can always be able to purchase more and more aspects of the game, or expand it to new skins and costumes, outfits, soundtracks, different elements of game, expansion packs. But then for music, the main upselling point, apart from all of the extras that you see, such as behind the scenes, as the live shows, but it's all about consistency now with the streaming world being in play. Record labels and artists and even publishers make money from the consistent use of their works constantly being played on streaming. Tipping within streaming is a really, really big thing right now. It's a massive income for the platform, as well as the streamer, as well as the game itself. Musicians have had this ability for a while with Bandcamp, where you can tip the band as much as you're willing to pay for the track, but it didn't seem to have as much traction as it did with the gaming world. What is the difference, and why is there such a difference between the same tipping strategy within the gaming world and the music world? Is it popular culture? Is it where the attention is? The way that I see it is that streamers are online all the time, and they're streaming as much as they can, and they're very regular, and that provides new content consistently ongoing, which you cannot replay or get the same or similar or a new experience from. And if you looked at it from that perspective, streaming is every day for hours consistent, but then could you make music at that level? Could you constantly be making music and putting that out there on the stream? And if you are willing as a musician to work in the same respect as a gamer does, then would you receive the same attention? Because I've not seen a success story that runs that over at this point in time, but I will keep my eyes out. So a few restrictions, I guess. The gaming community needs gamers to focus on their IP, just like I said earlier. The game has created online servers of which you can play and communicate with other people inside of that game. They've built the house of which you can all stay in. The music industry needs music to be made from musicians, which could be anyone. With music, it's very much outward. They let it seep into their identity, they let it into their clothes, they let it into their friends, their groups, the genre, the music they might be recommended. Both industries exploit the attention economy, but they also greatly reward those that are very innovative and brand new experience, a brand new IP. If you look at authentic gamers as streamers and authentic games, and also with music, is in new scenes, new collaborations or group identities that could exist. I think FOMO might be the key word here. I think that gaming will have the potential to transcend into every part of our life. And I think that there's so many, even now, undiscovered ways of which you can turn your music and your composition and your art into something greater than what it is. Again, thank you very much for listening. I'm hoping this is a short one. I'm probably going to say that every single week now. So once again, thank you very much, and hopefully see you next week. Hello, it's Kenny here. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can find more info to help with your own creative endeavors on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Just @EndeavorXVI for more info. All messages welcome, and thanks for listening.